Let's talk about stress and how to handle stress. But before I tackle this topic, I would like to really maybe instead of jumping straight to how do we deal with stress, let's talk a little bit generally about why do we stress and what happened to us when we stress. And is stress something good or bad? And you'd be surprised that some stress is actually good. And how do we handle it if we are stressed? And as I said, like, this all sound like a little bit medical or physiological, but I can't really not touch on a spiritual part of of being faithful people. So I'll keep this till the end. We always keep the best till the end. And everyone gets through stressful moment, but I want you to know that there is a big difference between going through stress and leading a stressful life. Okay? So that's the big distinction here, that everyone, whether we're Christian, non-Christian, faithful, atheist, whatever, every human, single human being, or even animals, we go through stress. And that's part of life. That's the package. Being just like on Earth, we will have to go through stress. But there is a difference between me going through stress and me leading a stressful life. Okay? So, and this part is not good. It's not good. It's like, sometimes when I tune my guitar, and if I'm talking to someone and just like, I keep turning the key and I forget that I'm tuning my guitar, and then you touch the string and you feel like, oh my God, it's gonna snap, right? So some people are like that, and we don't wanna be like this. We don't wanna be like this in our life. Okay, so let's talk about reasons for stress. So I classified it as just like, I put it under natural things because, as I said, this happens to every living cell, okay? And there are some psychological diseases. Is Laila here? Laila? I know Laila. Your sister is Laila, right? I know she studied psychology. Okay, I could have used her help, but that's okay. And medical reasons, you would be surprised that sometimes, as I'll mention, there are some medical reasons that cause that. So what do I mean by natural? Natural. So every time we face a challenge, this challenge will create in us a little bit of fear. Fear of what? So there is fear of maybe failure. I'm not going to maybe achieve what I want. So fear of failure. Fear to lose something, lose a position, or lose credit, or lose a person. You can lose a person to a beloved one, to a disease, or right? So every time there is a challenge, there is this fear that comes with it. And this fear is what generates in me this anxious feeling, right? And this anxiety now that lives inside of me will start to tune me to a new wavelength. So I try to appear normal, but my wavelength inside is really different. And this is what physiologically we call preparation for the fight or flight response. Yeah, okay. Hi, Laila. I just asked about you, so God sent you, so. Okay, so what are factors that will make this stress will magnify the stress or will intensify the stress. So maybe lack of adequate knowledge. I have to go for a test, and I don't think I have enough knowledge. And this is usually what, you know, every time we have a test, we feel that, oh, we still don't have enough knowledge to go for the test. So lack of adequate knowledge, lack of adequate experience, right? Sometimes, like, if this is going to be the first time you go for the driving test, right? And then you're gonna be a little bit panicking, or maybe trying to hide that you're panicking and appear brave, right? But lack of experience is another reason. Or maybe I'm trying to prepare, but it's really very ill prepared for. Or some people, you know, rely a lot and all the time on their intelligence, how smart they are, their physique, and then their ego cannot accept any defeat. Or so this another factor that sometimes make, you know, when I'm challenged, I am stressed. Some people have what we call non-realistic expectations, right? So if you set your expectations very high, you're also setting yourself for high level of stress. And sometimes we come across unexpected scenario in life. You know, you hear about a friend or a father or a mother or a sister. You hear some bad news, and that's totally unexpected, and then you become stressed. And one last factor is what I called a painful past. Some people went through, painful moments in their life. For some people, this could have lasted maybe for maybe a year or two. For some people, it could have took decades of pain and stress. Some people were abused when they were young, right? So that's another reason, you know, that's another factor why sometimes, you know, the stress will be magnified, and you will be surprised it will continue to live with you. So I grouped all those things under, like, natural. Naturally, those things will make us stress, and those factors will intensify this stress. Now, there are medical reasons. You would be surprised. Some people have medical issues that make them sometimes stressed. So it's not like they are crazy or no. So there is a disease, for instance, called pheochromocytoma. So it's a disease in the suprarenal gland. And there is this sudden influx of hormones in your blood. So those people get sudden onset of anxiety and headache and high blood pressure. And they are not crazy. They are not, like, you know, if you think malak man to kwais. No, there is something wrong with his body. So that's just like an example. Some people who take drugs, you know, recreational drugs, or sometimes with the high comes at the cost of making you stressed and nervous, and we see this. Or sometimes side effects of medications that we take, sometimes that they could cause you to feel stressed. Simple thing is, like, you know, the cold meds sometimes, you know, they have a component that could raise your blood pressure, make your heart beat faster. So that's medical. Psychological, people who studied psychology, we know that there is what we call the mood disorders. And under the umbrella of mood disorders, we have the general anxiety disorders, and there is the spectrum is big. So there is simple anxiety, but this could go up to specific phobias. People sometimes have phobias to different things, to animals or to objects or to, you know, or to people, you know, and sometimes people go all the way to what we call panic attacks, and then, you know, we see them coming by ambulance to emergency just to discover that, no, they did not have a heart attack or anything. They are not faking the symptoms. They really feel that they have a heart attack. They feel the pain. Their blood pressure is high. Their pulse is racing. So they are not faking it. And there is also another psychological disturbance called obsessive-compulsive disorder. Did you hear about it? Huh? The obsessive-compulsive disorder is when people feel like, you know, they have to, they are kind of just like, you know, they can't prevent repeating a certain thought or a certain action because maybe I forgot to turn off the stove. So they go check every 5 minutes. Oh, I forgot to lock the door. So they go check on that every 5 minutes. And this could be also at the level of the thinking. Sometimes people have difficulty not thinking about something, you know, so they keep repeating. So we say this is an obsessive compulsive disorder. And post-traumatic stress disorder, like as I said before, it could make us become sick in the future if we've been abused or we have maybe witnessed people who go for war, soldiers, and then they see horrors, you know, it lives with them for a long time. And some people have such difficulty getting rid of that, and they live with what we call post-traumatic stress disorder. And sometimes we have a mix of, the worst thing is like, you know, you have a patient who have like a mix of just like, you know, psychological disorders plus whatever from what I said, and as soon as you see those people coming through the door, you know, like, you know, it's not going to be a happy encounter. And then if those people tell you, I feel like I'm going to kill myself, I feel sometimes like I want to tell them, you know what, I want to kill myself too. Seeing you coming through the door. No, I'm joking, but sometimes it's very difficult. It's very difficult when we have a combination of too many things and you don't know where to start. So, what does stress do to us? So, like in a perfect world, this stress was meant to prepare us to face a challenge, okay? So if things go normal, you know, this stress will prepare you for what we call the fight part of the response, right? So like your body will prepare itself, like, you know, your heart is pumping more blood, your blood pressure is a bit higher, and you know, like your pupils dilate, you're more alert, you're more apt to learn. This component of the stress is good, as long as it stays under control. It's only when things go beyond control, right, this is when, yes, we will need help. And there's two systems in our body. One is called the sympathetic, and one is called the parasympathetic, okay? The parasympathetic is the part of the system, the nervous system, that works when you are laying on the couch, watching a movie, relaxing. This, the parasympathetic is taking over. And the opposite, when you are facing a challenge, it's the sympathetic that takes over. And as we said, prepares your body physiologically for the fight response. And we have this surge of adrenaline that, as I said, prepare the body for the fight part. When it goes outside what we expect, this is a problem, and it becomes a problem. I'll just lower the chair. Can you still hear me, guys? Yeah, okay. So I'm going to share with you like a funny story that I lived. When I was in Madison third year, and I was playing guitar in a band, and we just, you know, started to form a band, and we were excited about. It was nothing to do with the church. That was just like, yeah. So, and we had like I only knew the person who played keyboard. That's it. But the other people, I don't know how, like, you know, people talk to each other. And so we ended up having this five people, and we were training. At that time, my parents moved to a different apartment, so we had this apartment that we could use for training. So we went there for a couple times, and only after two times, like, you know, the guy who plays the drums came with 200 Egyptian pounds in his hand and said, I got our first, like, you know, first hafla. I said, what? We're just like barely preparing. He said, no. So, okay, where is the hafla? And he says, okay, it's going to be the graduation, a graduation party for the faculty of veterinaries. And it's the dean, and like there's like 400 to 500 students. And I said, are you crazy? Like, you know, like we only have 3 days. And we literally had 3 days. So we said, okay, we'll try to take the challenge, okay, and we'll do our best. And we were just like training day and night. And then the singer, he had a beautiful voice. And he would come with the songs that we chose, and he write them on little pieces of paper, and say, his name was Muhammad. So I said, Muhammad, are you? Oh yeah, don't worry, I'm learning. I'm working on the lyrics. So we only have 3 days for him to learn the lyrics, but don't worry. So we did our best, and we went that day, and like we go to the theater, like, you know, literally minimum of 400 students, like, you know, waiting for the band to start. And then we started, like, first song, and we played the introduction, waiting for Muhammad to sing, and he was there. That's why, from that day, I don't like to use microphone. No, I'm kidding. So he was holding the microphone, and we finished the introduction, and then we're waiting for Muhammad to sing, and he's not singing. So we played it again. And guess what? Like, you know, we're not playing in front of, let's say, like Swedish people who don't know this song. Like, those are Egyptians, so why isn't he singing? So we played again, and he wasn't, and then we started seeing the shaking, like he was shaking, and then, you know, he forgot the lyrics. So what do we do now? Like Muhammad put his hand in his pocket and started to look for the papers where he had the lyrics. Small papers like this. And then, you know, as it was shaking, like, you know, everything went on the, yes. And then he went on his knees. And at this point, like, you know, you could imagine, like, you know, everyone was laughing. And then they thought that was a fun show, but it wasn't. And but he sang, and like everyone gave him a good hand, but they said, thank you guys, you know, you can leave now. And we left. And we left after the first song, and it was terrible. So this is just like an example to show you that sometimes stress, when it goes beyond control, it could ruin everything. And it could get other innocent people killed too. But okay, so in medicine, we use a combination of two things, medication and what we call counseling or like psychotherapy. So medication, we use tranquilizers or sedatives, and then those medication, they kind of they calm us, they sedate us. We use them also to make people fall asleep. That's why we call them sedatives and tranquilizers. But the bad thing about them is that they are habit forming, and people become addicted to those medications. And that's why us as physicians, we don't really like to give, we give them, but we hate to see people on those medication all the time. We sometimes use a medication called a beta blocker. So the good thing about this is that it's not habit forming or anything, but it blocks the receptor. So when there is a high influx coming from the nervous system to your heart to beat fast, or for the vessels to constrict and the blood pressure go up, or you know, the sweat glands or the flushing of the skin. Like some people, when they go for interview, they are not comfortable because you can see on them that they are sweating, or, you know, they are flushed. So when we give them a beta blocker, just like, you know, sometime before their interviews, it works very well and it calms them. It's often difficult to see people have like what we call an anxiety disorder, but when they become aware of it, they become depressed. The mood starts to go down, And that's why oftentimes we have, under mood disorders, we have anxiety and depression, they go hand in hand. And that's why the medication that we use to treat depression is the same medication that we use to treat anxiety. So we have a famous medication called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So this now works at the level of the brain, and it boosts the level of the serotonin in the blood, and this helps to elevate the mood, and with this, like, you know, things start to improve. We use also what we call counseling or cognitive behavioral therapy, and this is very important. And away from just like talking about any, you know, faith or belief or anything, using this counseling is very important. So we teach people how to, okay, stop worrying, how to relax, how to, maybe you need to exercise and you need to go for jogging, you need to maybe meditate, you know, lower your expectations, and instead of worrying, take an action, right? So all those things help, but it stops there. As I'm gonna just like continue, it stops there. And I'll come back to this point because it's very important. Now, the spiritual part or the spiritual remedy for anxiety and stress, faith. And this is the part that I kept till the end. And maybe in my practice, use it. I used not to talk to people about faith and spirituality in my practice, but now I do, actually. And I'll tell you why. So, as I was preparing the talk today, I was just like thinking about faith, F-A-I-T-H. And we live in an era of abbreviations where everything is abbreviations now, right? And like, you know, it makes me just like crazy when you read like a letter that comes to you and then just like CMPTA have decided to tackle the issue, and then there is even no legend to tell you what does this mean. So like every group of people, when they like, you know, gather now, they come up with a nice abbreviation for their group, you know, like COIA. I heard about COIA. It's COIA, right? So, but like, you know, if there is a legend that says what COIA is, that's nice. But if there isn't, then... So I actually, yeah, it drives me crazy. But I decided to do the same. So as I was looking at faith today, I said, what does faith stand for? And I came up with this. For all illnesses, try him. For all illnesses, try him. And of course, you know him. Okay. So now I'm going to talk about the faith as a component to handle our stress, okay? And I want to tell you that no one is immune from feeling stress. Even like Jesus Christ himself, you know? The last, you know, few hours when he was in Gethsemane, if you read the description of the Bible, how stressed he was, and the description of his sweating, like, you know, coming like drops of blood, this is an intense a person going through intense stress. So and maybe like the Holy Spirit allowed us to see this picture so that Jesus, who believe he's a God, but took our flesh, he tells us, yes, even Jesus has stress, so it's okay to go through stress. You're not abnormal if you go through stress and you start to manifest it, okay? So, actually the way we handle stress makes all the difference in life. And that's why it's important to have tools in my pockets if life faces me with a situation that puts me in stress, I have some tools that's going to help. Now, if you want to add this layer of faith to what I mentioned, mentioned before, as just counseling, medication, it's really up to everyone, but we will see how important that is. I remember, like in our practice, we were not supposed to talk about any faith, and that's true. But I discovered, like, and especially so in the last maybe year and a half, that like if I really want to help my patients, I need to touch on spirituality. And I started to do that, actually. And you would be surprised. Lots of people are just like, you know, waiting for someone to wake them up. Lots of people are just like, it's like a dry land that's waiting for a little bit of rain, believe me. I remember that girl who moved from Ontario to Manitoba, and then she had struggled with stress, and then her boyfriend in Manitoba, even though he had a decent, very decent profession, but he was into drugs and alcohol, and she herself became, like, you know, this did not help, so they both became alcoholic. And then her stress and anxiety were through the roof to the point where she could not function. And we kept working on, we used medication, we used counseling, I sent her for everything. And then one day she came and she told me this, and I can't forget. She said, you know what, Dr. Miguel, I want to tell you one thing. When I do those CBT things, they are good. But they are good when I do them. Once I stop, they leave me empty. I feel this emptiness inside of me. And I felt like, okay, it's time to talk about, you know, faith. And I started really to use this analogy with people, and I told them, do you have a smartphone? And it's a silly question, because no one now walks around with the flip phone that your grandparents used to have. No, I'm joking. Did you guys have a flip phone, like the one that, yes? So I'm not that old. No, I'm serious. No? Yes? Yeah, so maybe 10 years ago we used to have this nice phone that, you know, you just open it. So, could we call this phone a smartphone? No. You know why? I'll tell you why. Because this phone did not have any connectivity to like Wi-Fi or a network. It was just a line. You can talk, receive calls, and you can text. Done. Now we call this guy a smartphone thanks to presence of a Wi-Fi or a 3G or whatever network. So you're connected, right? You're connected. So you can surf the web. You can just go visit spaces, do so many things. And that's why, like, I used to have a GPS, and I used to have a voice recorder, and I used to have, now this device, one device, has it all, right? It has it all. And then think of it this way, it's really a smart. So I tell my patients, you know what? When we are connected, this is what makes of us just like, you know, like not simply, like, don't understand me wrong, but animals, they have physiology, same way we do. They have anatomy. We like, you know, medicine has progressed because we do study physiology and anatomy and stuff on animals first. So what makes us human and what makes us, different and in the image and likeness of God is this connection with God. Once we abolish this, once we cut this connection, we are reducing ourselves from a smartphone. We're going back to this. So we have physiology. We need to eat. We feel hungry. We need to feel pleasure. And when we have pain, we say, we run to see the doctor. We want to be pain-free, right? But that's it. And we reduce our life I feel like there's something happening. Okay, so I once read this nice phrase that says, we live by faith or by fear. And I liked it very much. But this makes it also sound like black and white. And I don't want you to think that, oh, because I stress a lot or I have maybe an issue with stress, I don't have faith. No. Today I want you to maybe think differently. Think of faith as a fruit, and it is truly, isn't faith one of the 9 fruits of the Holy Spirit that we read about in Galatians, right? Right? Faith is one of the 9 fruit of the Holy Spirit. So it is a fruit. And think of it as a fruit. This fruit starts as a small on the tree, and it starts to grow bigger and stronger and tastier and everything, right? So our life is a journey. Our life of faith is a journey. So don't just discredit yourself and say, oh, I don't have faith. When you sit with Abuna, tell him, oh, you know what, Abuna, I don't have faith. No, you do have faith, but maybe you're still at an early stage in your faith journey, okay? And sometimes, this all what we need is time and going through experiences for this fruit to become stronger. Make sense? Huh? Okay. So as we will see that, this fruit of the Holy Spirit, which is faith, it will slowly and mysteriously grow on us, and it will transform our life. And but this is a crucial point, because sometimes we behave with God, we behave in a very childish way. I'm going to tell you a story about a kid whose family was just introduced to the Christian faith. And I'm not sure if this is, I don't think it's a true story. I heard it anyway, but I'm not sure if it's a true story or not. So this is a kid who, saw his parents talking about the Christian faith and how God is just like a father who lives in heaven and who just easily make everything possible. So this boy goes to his room, and he, for the first time, he wants to pray. So he prays to, dear Lord, if it is in your will that I get a bike, I would love to have a bike. And I know you're busy. So many people are praying to you. So I'll give you a week, and I would love to see. I would love to see a bike, by let's say next Friday. Thank you, Lord. And then he counts the days, and he's so maybe sure from what he sees from his parents, the talks about the Christianity and the faith, he's going to get the bike in 1 week. And then after a week, he looks outside the window, and then there's no bike. So he sees that every time he sits with his parents, they hold firm to their faith, and they speak about this Lord as, very powerful, sitting in heaven, making everything easy to realize. So he goes again, and now he changes the tone. And he says, dear Lord, I'm your son, and I demand that I want a bike, and I want a blue bike, and I want it tomorrow by 8 o'clock. Okay? So he wakes up excited the next day. He looks from the window. There is no bike. So now he's very angry. He's very angry. So he came up with a weird behavior, he stole a statue, a brand new statue for the Virgin Mary that his parents just bought, and then he just disappeared in the bush, and his mom didn't really know what's happening. And then after an hour, he comes back. And then this boy goes to the room, he closed the door, and he prays to God and says, dear Lord, if you want to see your mother again. So it's very funny, actually. And then, but you know what? Sometimes this is what we do with God when it comes to, asking for things. And how come we have faith, but nothing is happening? So we have to be very careful, huh? That we want to take our faith to a more mature level. So we need to trust in God, even though things seem very slow to happen, or even if it seems that God is not listening, or those Christians are crazy, you know, that it seems that, like, you know, like the parents of this boy, who, like, he said, like, why are they holding firm to that? Every time I come to church, like, you know, people are praying, you know, Abuna is giving a nice waz, and okay, so there must be something working, but why isn't it working for me? And this is what we need to work on. So if we have this life of trust, let's go back to the challenging scenarios that I mentioned, you know, at the beginning of the talk. And then, you know what, we will see how this is going to be different. So if you're, for instance, overwhelmed by a lot of work that you have to go through, so you can just, like, you know, if you have a strong faith, you can just, like, remember what Peter says, cast all your anxiety on him because he cares on you. And if we remember the psalm, you will eat the fruit of your labor, blessings and prosperity will be yours. You will eat the fruit. It doesn't have to be maybe the fruit I want, but maybe God wants to choose a different one, but you will eat. It's not probably you will eat the fruit, you will eat. It's this relationship of trust that governs my life with God. And I know if I work, I am going to eat the fruit. This trust will carry you through whatever you're doing with less stress. If you have a little self-confidence in life, in the Psalm 125, we read, those who trust in the Lord are like Mount Zion, which cannot be shaken but endures forever. And your self-confidence, you know, starts to maybe change. Like, you know, here the David is talking about, if I have trust in the Lord, I become like Mount Zion. If I have lack of experience or maybe lack of knowledge, we know that we use reason and logic a lot, especially for people who have no faith, and that's okay. And we too, we use logic and reason all the time. But the difference is we put all this reason and logic under the umbrella of God's will. Like, outside faith, people don't see anything outside the logic and the reason. We still use it, right? But we do put everything under God's will. We know that no one has absolute knowledge, but we believe that God has this absolute knowledge. And then if you have this itch of my knowledge is not that big, remember in Proverbs when it says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and don't lean on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him and he will direct your path. What if we had a painful past experience or like an utter failure or abuse, you know? How can a new life, you know, deliver itself from a painful and a persistent past that lives with me? For a Christian, a stumbling stone that you know, at one point in my life made me fall and stumble, God will make it a stepping stone. So a stumbling stone that made me fall, it will become a stepping stone, and I'm going to be higher. And this is what God sometimes wants to do with us when things seem that they are not working. God is working in a completely different and mysterious way to change our life to the best. I want to finish because it's 10, so I'm going to skip some. But I'm going to go to the take-home message, okay? If we believe that, number one, God is in control, and despite my intelligence, I am totally submitting everything to his will. If number two, I see God as a loving father and he never forsakes his children. Number three, I know that his way are always different from what we want. But why? Because he is working on my faith journey. He's working to make, yes, he makes me sometimes lift heavy burdens so that I end up with more spiritual muscles. So if I know that God is in control, I'm submitted to his control, he's a loving father, he will never forsake his children, and he's constantly working on refining my faith, even if he allow me to go through a difficult path, and I know that my inner peace could be deranged. Yes, my inner peace could be deranged, but it will never be lost. Then, if I know all this, then I can advance in life and just like look at stress from a different perspective and a different angle. And while we use things like, you know, let's go for a jog or let's meditate or, yes, I'm going to do this, but I have this fund of faith that doesn't make me feel empty by the end of the day. So I'm going to stop here, but I'll read last verse from Philippians. St. Paul says, in nothing be anxious, but in everything, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, let your request be made known to God. The peace of God, which passes all understanding, will guard your hearts and your thoughts in Christ Jesus. That's in Philippians 4, verse 6. Thank you. Any question? You have a question? Sorry. Oh yeah, it's a lot. Like, you know, lots of people actually they find it a stigma that they take medication, so they want to fight their whatever depression or anxiety with only counseling and talk therapy. And we have proven that talk therapy works as good as medications. The way medication works is this: like, you know, we have like the mood part, okay, and then when your mood is low, you tend to think, your thought is negative. When your thought is negative, then your behavior is negative too, right? So what happens is, like, when we give medication that elevate the mood, you know, the thinking process starts to go from negative to positive. And then when you are thinking positive, your behavior becomes positive, your actions are positive. And then with time, people, when they are more into this positive, you know, domain, they say, we can afford to stop the medication. Because meanwhile, you start to learn new technique, and then we also, in the what we call CBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, we analyze how people think. Because sometimes, just like, you know, it's, there is, you know, a fault in the way you process the input, you know, like, oh, she said that, she must have meant this. No, she didn't. It's maybe your sensitivity that made you, and then by modulating this way of thinking, we changed the behavior. So yes, I've seen lots of people that don't want to, and then some people want medication. Well, yeah, that's a good question. Like, you know, I'm not sure if, like, you know, all parents have, like, you know, open channels of discussion with their kids. And we grew up in, you know, we've seen everything. Like, you know, I've never been friend with my father. Like, you know, I love him and I respect him very much, but I've never been friend with him. And I don't see myself one day, if I was stressed or depressed, like, going talking to my father. But again, there is nothing wrong about that. You know, you could have a sister that is just a sister, but you could have a sister that's a sister and a friend, right? So there is no rule when it comes to that. You look at the situation at home, and if your parents are open for discussion and you think that they are going to be helpful, then use this help as well. But if not, don't feel like, you know, that you're doing something wrong and start adding to your stress, but, oh, I'm not talking to Baba and Mama. No, don't. And then now, yes, you can use, like, you know, if you trust your doctor, you can talk to your doctor. If you have, a father of confession, absolutely, this is, a very good resource. You know, friends are very helpful when it comes to depression. A spiritual guide, you know, and then, yeah, like, you know, medications at the end of the day could help, but I do prescribe lots of medication for people, and then it's sad that, like, you know, believe me, like, you know, when I was practicing in Winnipeg, and I'm not lying, 80% of my patients are on antidepressants, 80%, if not more. That's sad. Like, you know, if I have 10 people coming to see me today, 8 of them, beyond other things, you know, for high blood pressure or diabetes or anything, but there is this element of depression. And the society in which we live here, it's paying a huge price. This liberalism that we're proud of, it's coming at a huge price that the kids are paying, and then, you know, so it's, but it doesn't mean that we as Christian, we don't go through moments of anxiety, we don't go through moments of depression. Absolutely we do, like, we're human beings, and as I said at the beginning, it's very natural that we go through stresses, and those stresses, when they are sometimes too much, they make us feel like, oh, I can't do it anymore. And you start now, if you leave yourself for some time with doing nothing and just, like, lifting this bag of stress, you would become depressed as well. And this is not good, because depression, when you go read about the definition of depression, so you find that it's a person who has, like, you know, no energy. So they either sleep most of the time, or they can't fall asleep, you know, or they either eat a lot, or they don't want to eat at all. And you know, all those symptoms of depression. So absolutely, if you feel that it's coming or it's happening, don't leave yourself there. You have to find help. So as I'm, like, if it's not your parents, there is no shame about that. You don't have to jump right away to medications, but you have, use Abuna, use a spiritual guide, use a friend that you trust. And by the way, let me tell you, like, you know, I have heard from patients, and I'm going to share this with you because it's very important, especially for girls, you know. I say, when I was depressed, I was sharing with one of my friends, and after a certain time, this friend, you know, turned to be the worst enemy ever, and I have shared with her lots of things, and then they are using things like social media to, and then I've seen things that made people, some girls wanting to, they were suicidal because, like, you know, the person in whom they confided, and then, you know, they thought they were the best friends when they needed them, turned to be. So you have to also be careful when you choose a friend, okay? So when you have so much happening in your life and you really want someone to confide in, be careful when you choose. And that's why, to be honest with you, The best friend is the person of Jesus Christ. Like you know, if you know how to create this friendship with the person of Jesus Christ, you know, we're not crazy, by the way, by just, like, you know, locking yourself in your room and praying to Jesus. It doesn't mean that you are a crazy person. And even if people think I am crazy by doing this, that's okay. But I'm telling you, like, you know, in my practice, I have seen people crying in my room when I started to talk to them about the faith. I had a professor in the University of Science. He was just, like, you know, struggling with anxiety to the point where, like, you know, his wife was very anxious, and then she started to come with him. And then we've done everything. And then just, like, you're talking to a person who's just, like, you know, like, knowledge-wise, wow, and then just, like, very respectful person. And then I had to choose this to use this card, the faith. And I started to talk to him, and he said, you know what? Yeah, I grew up like, you know, Christian, but I, you know, I don't use it. And I said, maybe it's time. Maybe it's time you need to pray. Maybe it's time. And you know what? He started to cry. And his wife cried, and they stood up, and his wife said, I think we now know why things aren't working. It's been decades of just like, you know, separating and cutting ourselves from this life, you know, of spirituality. And this is what happened. This is what happened. I had another person, like, you know, as I was just like, you know, talking to him, I remember I said prayers and meditation. I said, what's the difference between prayer and meditation? I said, well, simply prayer, you talk to God. Meditation is the opposite. God talks to you through maybe like nature, through, and then like this guy came after a couple of weeks and he had the two antidepressants I gave him, and he put them and said, thank you, doctor, I don't need your. It was so good. It felt so good. I felt so good that, you know, we, by the way, guys, like, you know, a service, when we say a service, it doesn't mean that you all have to be here to give lessons. Some of you might, but it doesn't mean that 100% of us have to be like, you know, servants, or 100% of us have to be shamamta, or 100% have to be. Service also happens outside the church, right? When we say I am Christian, it means that I am like Christ when I behave outside. I am completely against people who on Sunday in church they are one thing, and then the six other days I zaish. We shouldn't be like this. We should not be like this. And that's my opinion. We should take this Jesus that we meet with at church, we should take him with us outside. Do we all agree? Only three people nodded. That's okay. Oh. Yes.
Yeah. I was just saying, like, when you're talking about the faith thing, I know it's kind of awkward to include it in our jobs these days, but I don't know if it's still there, but on Netflix there was a movie called Happy. It was all about kind of all the recent research on positive psychology and how recently they found a lot of times that replacing people who are on antidepressants just by faith, or people who believe in like simply were a lot happier than, you know, they did studies where
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, we were always in this country, like, you know, I have to be cautious because, like, you know, I come from a different culture, and, you know, we were told we are not supposed to. And by the way, when I talk to my patients about spirituality, I don't talk about religion. I do not sell religions, right? I just talk about how to ignite again your spirituality and how to be connected, okay? So what pushed me, two things. One, there is a real need for it. Like, you know, when you do everything, counseling is done, nothing works. Medications, you're increasing doses and you're seeing side effects of medication, nothing is happening. You have to use this card. I'm sorry to say it. You have to use it. And then when I'm talking to people who are alcoholics or in drug addictions, and then they go for, you know, the meetings, you know, the Alcohol Anonymous, you know, meetings, patients start to tell me, they talk to them about the faith. They even give them Bibles. I said, what? They give you Bibles? They said, yeah, they give us Bibles there. But okay, if they are doing it here, why am I holding that? So I found that, like, why? Like, you know, really why? Like, you know, if you have a chance to help a person, and it's not just like, you know, no one is going to pay you anything if you do this. This is just like part of me talking about the service. Outside, there's so much happening outside the walls of the church that needs us to be, if you're not a servant in church, at least be a servant outside church. That's the simple message that I want to pass to you. If you're not having any role in church, you could be the best person, the best ambassador outside the church. Okay? Any other questions?
We're all stressed in
prasna. Okay, thank you guys, and I'll see you.
Thank you. Okay, I know Dr. Samir from a long time, like from maybe 15 years ago?
No, more than that.
More than this?